Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porther with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. We welcome in everyone watching on those various platforms. Right now discussing the Nashville Predators, we got a loaded show coming up for you today. Corey Curtis will join us at 8 o'clock. Caroline Fenton at 8:30, her first day with Stillman and Company, taking place later this afternoon. So looking forward to talking with her about that.
You get her all pumped up.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Newt Rockne speech.
That's right. There's going to be a speech involved for sure. Darren McFarland coming up at 9 o'clock to discuss the Nashville Predators as well. And then Nate James, new head coach of Austin Peay basketball, coming over from Duke. He'll join us at 9:15 as well. So lots to come today here on the show. Taking your thoughts, as always, on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, we are 1 week away from the trading deadline in the NHL, and we have spent a lot of time here on the program talking about the deadline, talking about some of the moves that the Predators could make, and now they've won 9 of their past 11. They've won 7 of their past 8. They're in a playoff spot in the Central Division. And it has been interesting to watch the fan base react to this. There are some that still remain, you know, holding strong to their belief that the Predators should sell off some of their assets. There are some that believe that they should just stand pat now and see what this team can do in the playoffs. I think there's a lot of variety right now when it comes to the fan base and what they'd like to do. Does the fact that we are 1 week away from the deadline and we've not seen anything happen yet, not really just with the Predators, but largely league-wide as well, there's not been a ton of activity up until this point. Does that fact change how you believe the Predators handle this deadline? When you factor in the winning that they've done as of late, you're back in a playoff spot. Here we are a week away from the deadline, and you've not seen any moves made by them at this point. I think you and I have just assumed and thought that the best course of action should still be to sell off some of these assets. Do you think that, as the fact that we're a week away and nothing's happened, changes that from your viewpoint to what could happen this week for the Predators?
Well, no, it doesn't change what I think should happen, but I know that's not what you're asking. I still think Granlund in particular is a trade that helps your future and does not necessarily end your chances of still making a playoff run. Now, trading Granlund at this very moment is much more less than ideal.
Yes.
Much more less than ideal because
– well said.
Yeah. Brilliant. Because you're banged up and you need bodies in the lineup. But I don't have any different feeling on what they should do there. I don't know on the fact that there's been no activity. I mean, a lot of cases you go down to the end and you're trying to get the best possible deal, and sometimes that urgency will end up helping you if you're a seller, right?
Yeah.
So maybe it's just a case of, right, so far, Poyle has not heard on the other end of that line what he wants to hear.
Could be. And
I don't buy that he's not engage in those calls.
Oh, I don't buy that either. And even if he doesn't end up going that route, which I think you and I feel like he still should, he's certainly having those conversations at this point. And it is fascinating. I mean, we're a week away, and it's fascinating from this standpoint. Like, Granlund in particular, we've heard about the Maple Leafs maybe being a fit for him. And talking about the quarantine that takes place. Now, there has been a change to the quarantine as well. It used to be 2 weeks, and now it has been moved down to 1 week that you would have to quarantine. So that makes the idea of trading for a guy in the States, if you're a Canadian team, a little bit more appealing.
It's not a non-starter.
Yeah, it's not just total non-starter anymore that you got to wait a couple weeks, and then all of a sudden it's almost May before you get any use out of him whatsoever. Like, it would be a quicker process up until this point. Although, I am interested to see, you know, with everything going on in Canada right now with COVID and, like, the 20 cases that are in Vancouver with the Canucks, how does that impact what happens moving forward here? That's going to be fascinating to see as well. But for the moment, the quarantine period, 1 week in Canada. So I think we've talked about this before of if you're a Canadian team trying to get a guy like Granlund on an expiring deal, you probably want to make that move sometime in mid to late March so he can come in, have some time to assimilate, and you can get some good time with him in the regular season, find out where that player would fit, and then make your playoff run from there. It's still a little bit later than I personally would like to make a trade for somebody like that at this point, but with the 1 week quarantine, not quite as devastating as the two in terms of trying to get in there and build team chemistry.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's like if you're a Canadian team and, you know, we've been talking about Toronto and Granlund for a long time, still could be absolutely worth your while here, you know, if you can make it happen. So this is, I'd love to know how many people have changed in the fan base on the trading issue.
Yeah.
It does feel also a little bit like, you know, still like the fans, I think most fans would still like to see something done in the name of helping the future of the franchise. But clearly, you know, these players, however you want to point to, young guys coming in and giving some veterans a little bit of a push, you know, some people coming into their own as players. I think that you got to look at this like there's a collective determination to, yeah, get to the playoffs, but also to, like, show that, like, this is still a good team, right?
Yeah.
I mean, these guys have, a lot of these guys have already campaigned in the past to stay together, and so there's, if they do make some kind of a significant deal, I'm sure that's not well received in the room, but I also think, I mean, if I'm a GM, how do you worry about that?
You can't. We're past the point of worrying about that. Like, when you get to the President's Trophy and you're out in Game 7 of the second round and the group wants to stay together, I think it's a much easier sell.
Makes sense.
You're like, okay, yeah, let's take another crack at this thing. When it's been going the way it's been going the last couple of years, and especially like the start of this year, how bad it was, it's a much tougher sell, I think, when it comes to that. So I agree. Like, if you're David Poile, there was a time where you could listen to that and I think really heavily weigh that factor. I don't think you can do that anymore. You've got to remove yourself from the emotion of it. And David Poile is very good at that. He can remove himself from the emotion of it like you need to as a good general manager in this league. I think that's going to be what's required here. But it is fascinating to me that we've seen nothing as of yet, not just with the Predators, but really league-wide as well. There's not been a ton of activity. I don't know, Ryan Porth, as you look at the deadline here, does the fact that nothing's happened yet with the Predators make you feel any differently when you factor in the winning they've done as of late and now they're in a playoff spot? Like, if you had to put a percentage chance on it, what would your percentage chance be that the deadline comes and goes and nothing happens with the Predators?
I'd say probably 15-20%. I'd say that's a pretty low number.
Yep.
But, I mean, how much activity has there really been around the league?
Not a lot.
I mean, if there were a lot of trades happening here in the last couple of weeks and the Preds weren't one of the teams involved in those trades, I think I think there would be a higher chance that Poile wasn't going to be doing anything. But I think there's a little bit of a stall factor with this trade deadline where not a lot of teams are wanting to add a lot of money.
Yep.
Before, you know, the end of the season. So,
and there's certainly years where it's just a big flurry right around the day, right? And
sure,
not a ton before it.
NHL trade deadline day is, it's one of the fun days in sports. It's really good. I mean, there's a lot of activity normally. Now, if you listen to Elliot Friedman and listen to Pierre LeBrun and the insiders around the league, they've said for weeks now that this particular deadline, probably don't expect a whole lot. Like, there's not going to be a ton of movement league-wide, but the Predators have been at the top of the list in terms of those conversations, whether it's been Ekholm or Granlund or whoever you want to throw out there. I mean, Forsberg at a time was in this discussion. That's not going to happen. So, I mean, I do think it's interesting that we've not seen much at all league-wide, but to your point, Joe, I mean, you could get to Saturday night, Sunday of next week, and into Monday, and that can change in a hurry. All it takes is one big deal to be made by a contender, and then other contenders look around and say, oh, well, we've got to respond to that, right. And then the ball's rolling from there.
So, Porth, you're saying 80 to 85% you think they will make a deal at this point?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's probably about right.
A buy?
I mean, I guess we didn't specify. I mean, look, I know Detroit's playing better. I know the Preds have injuries mounting up, but they just swept Detroit at home. You know, they very well could beat Detroit with the way they're playing. You know, beat them both times, and then you could be talking yourself into adding a piece.
Come on.
Whatever that piece is. I'm dead serious.
I was kidding. You serious?
Yes.
So 80 to 85% you think they make a deal, and you were thinking one or the other?
Mostly a sell. You know, whether that's Eric Hallow or Mikael Granlund or somebody else.
They can't buy.
They have four games this week before the deadline. If they win three of them, don't you, just knowing how David Poile has acted over the years, can't you see, maybe it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Maybe you
sell and a buy.
Maybe you sell off Hala or Granlund, but in turn get someone that isn't a rental.
Maybe so.
And can help you this year and next year. I don't know.
All right.
Not saying that should happen.
Rexro totally discounting that possibility.
He's completely brushing it off.
I mean, I can't imagine. I can't imagine. I hear what you're saying. I guess if, you know, if you're sort of just restructuring some things and you do also sell. I mean, the thing you can't do is the rental. You can't do that, right?
No.
I mean, that's, again,
no, yeah.
What are you going to do?
If you're going to get a rental, just keep Granlund.
Right, that's yeah, your exactly. I mean, yeah. That's your trade deadline yeah. move is to just keep him. I mean, what are you going to do that, again, you're talking about Tampa Bay. Your best case scenario is that you get Tampa Bay in a series to start the playoffs.
Well, it may not be Tampa Bay.
Or Carolina.
Well.
Or Florida.
Or Florida.
Florida has the most points in the league.
Yeah.
All right, that's fair.
Break up the Panthers.
Well, yeah.
I mean, they've been a bubble team in the past where David Poile has made small moves at the deadline to try to add depth.
Yeah.
You know.
Did he add anything in 17?
Oh, yeah. P.A. Parenteau, Vern Fiddler.
That's right.
Cody McLeod.
Yeah. That's right. He brought – was that – that wasn't the first McLeod.
That was the first McLeod.
Yeah,
that
was
the first McLeod.
It was.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and Fiddler and Parenteau, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Worked out.
I mean, in 2010, they –
those guys were – awesome.
I miss PA Parenteau.
In 2010, they were a bubble team and went out and got Dennis Grebishkov.
Yeah.
And
who could forget?
2008, they were a bubble team and went out and got Jan Halavich and Brandon Bochenski.
But see, when you say, so bubble team on the rise, bubble team moving up. Bubble team in 17 is, again, young
sure.
team with has had injuries. I mean, this is not that. Still.
I understand, but the team in 08 was not built to really win in the playoffs, and he still made very small moves to go, like gave up a sixth or seventh round pick for a couple of players.
He did, but I think the circumstances were a little different then financially with the franchise.
You needed to make
the
playoffs.
You needed to make the playoffs.
Sure.
Like, you had to get that playoff gate coming in there.
2010?
Yeah.
I mean, that team?
I think that's a better example, yeah.
With Dennis Grebishkov?
Yeah.
Well, here's another thing about this team and the idea of buying. Like, standing pat, I still think would be a mistake. But, you know, buying also is you're messing with the chemistry. I mean, obviously there's some good chemistry stuff going on, right? Like, what are you getting?
That Yossi's captaining very well right now.
Maybe that's it. Maybe Yossi's throwing everybody around the locker room, smacking people upside the head.
Yeah.
But seriously, like, obviously, this has been very, very impressive, especially considering the injuries.
Yeah.
And clearly they've got a very good – they're very connected as a team on the ice. So, the chemistry's got to be very good right now. So what move are you going to make that, you know, that significantly improves you, but also you're messing with chemistry if you do that?
Yeah. Maybe there's some out there. We'll discuss it on the other side. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. What would you do in the final week leading up to the trade deadline if you were general manager of the Nashville Predators? Give us your thoughts on that text line. We'll discuss it when we come back. Right now, though, got to tell you about my friends at FanDuel Sportsbook, and it's title time, and FanDuel Sportsbook is hooking you up like a champion. They're celebrating the big game with 40-1 odds on either Gonzaga or Baylor. That's right, new users, 40-1 odds on either team to win the championship game, which means you can win $200 on a $5 bet. Gonzaga on the verge of history, going for an undefeated season tonight. You've been watching from the sidelines all tournament long. Now is the perfect time to get in on the action. All you got to do is download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and make your first deposit to unlock those exclusive 40-1 odds. The app is very easy to use. I've become a master of the FanDuel Sportsbook app. So if I can do it, you can do it as well. All you got to do is just log in, sign up, promo code Rob, so they know that I sent you. When you sign up with the FanDuel Sportsbook, that promo code is Rob. And if you do it and you win, you'll get paid in as little as 24 hours. You must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. New users only. Must wager in designated offer market. $10 first deposit required. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. And for problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789. 1025 The Game is kicking off every weekend with some free beer.
Free beer!
And who doesn't love free beer? Make sure you're tuning in all day on Friday for your chance to win a $25 gift card from Bavarian Beer House located at Opry Mills Mall. We'll have that opportunity coming up on Friday for another outstanding trivia question from Ryan Porth. Elijah Campbell with the trivia question on Friday.
How was it?
It was good.
All right.
It was pretty good one.
What was it?
It was the... Now I'm blanking on what it was.
It was good.
It was good.
It was basketball.
It was so good that y'all can't remember it.
It was Gonzaga, I think, had won every game by 14 or more.
Yep.
Last team to
get into the Final Four, winning every game by 14 or more, at least.
I forget the answer, too.
04 UConn.
Oh, yeah. Emeka Okafor, Ben Gordon. Yep. Gover, Jeremy K. Gover, by the way, with a nice submission on the buzzer beater. And he's got a great point. The Tyus Edney, UCLA, and I don't know if the year is listed in this thing he sent to us, but that was about, I was going to say 95 against Missouri. That was incredible. Also, for people out there, and I replied to this, who remember the Danny Ainge, same thing, did this for BYU, weave through an entire defense. I mean, that's the thing. Like, there's been so many incredible. I mean, again, Bryce Drews, that play for Valpo to beat Ole Miss was amazing. But I do think that the stakes have to be a part of this too, right?
Yeah.
Like at least, like the Leitner was to get to the Final Four, Jenkins to win it all. Now we have Suggs to get to the title game. I do think that has to weight the answers a little bit, but I will agree that like the Edney thing, it was like how there's no way he's getting all the way to the other end, and he did.
Well, that can be the submission under the other in the poll question.
Yes, sure? So please do that, Jeremy. Jeremy K. Gover, please write that in other. Thank you.
Right now, talking Preds, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, we've talked about the trading deadline and some decisions coming up quickly for David Poile and the front office for the Nashville Predators. Ben, on our text line, texts in and says, is David's seat still warm? And is there anything within reason he might do that could backfire into him being fired this offseason? I would say at this point he's probably in good shape. And if they make the playoffs, I think he'll be in really good shape moving forward. Like, I don't anticipate David Poile doing anything at this point, given the way this season has gone, to jeopardize the future of the group. Like, we talked about maybe there's a scenario where they buy. And I know some fans have talked about that. I just don't see it. Like, I don't really find a realistic scenario out there where David Poile is going to spend future assets to bring somebody else.
Just going to buying spree. Like,
I don't see that being within the realm of possibility here for the Predators. So I don't think there's going to be anything that's done that jeopardizes the future and you lose out on more assets. I think you and I have talked about, I think it's important for the Predators to continue to stockpile some of these assets. And with the young guys that they've had that have come in and played well, I think you feel better like if you were to trade a Granlund or a Halla or maybe both of them. You still have guys in the pipeline like a Pitlick that could come in and play. We've talked about Tolvanen. We've talked about Trennan and Olivier finding their own right now as well. I mean, they've got some younger guys that have come in and played well. I said this last week. To me, if I'm Poile, that makes it easier to sell because you've got young guys playing well, and the more they play, the better off that's going to be for your franchise in the long term in terms of making this thing get through the retool or the rebuild, whatever you want to call it, quicker with some of these young guys maturing maybe a little bit faster than you'd hoped.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the question on the warm seat, we've talked about this. I don't know who would fire him. Like in the ownership group, like it's not clear. You know, I don't. This is a different situation than a professional team with, like, I don't know, Jerry Jones is the owner. You know, like, I mean, there's some teams where you've got an owner or Daniel Snyder who's trigger happy. So that's one thing. But also, when we were talking about that more with Poile several weeks ago, it looked like this season might be like terrible.
Really bad. Yeah.
And so then it's like, okay, well, what have you built here? And look at how bad it is. Well, now you have these young guys who come in and say, oh, so I guess that Tolvanen pick's looking pretty good now, right? And
yeah.
You mentioned some of those guys like Olivier. What about a Carrier?
Yeah.
He's looked like a guy to me who has a future. So, you know, some of your choices look better now.
Well, and your outlook does too, just in your terms outlook, of what the future looks
your
like.
Your outlook looks better, and a GM is still ultimately judged by the record of the team, right?
Sure.
And that's over a short and a long-term period. Well, this team is pushing for the playoffs. So, I mean, I think that has gone away. And, yeah, I've never bought the idea that Poile was just going to be like, let's let it ride, baby. Yeah. I don't think now. Maybe Porth's right, and there's some buy scenario. I'd be shocked still.
Let's go to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Trevor texted in, I was at the game Saturday, and Philip Forsberg was listed at the beginning as a scratch and not with the injured players. Do you know why that would be? Yes, he's not on injured reserve. So if you're on injured reserve, you'll be listed with the injured players.
It doesn't,
he is not on IR.
It doesn't mean that you're a quote-unquote healthy scratch necessarily.
Yeah,
you can be hurt and not on injured reserve.
Yes, they are. They're not healthy scratching,
or
Philip Forsberg, I can promise you.
Phil, appreciate you, buddy.
Yeah.
We're gonna roll with this a little bit,
yeah,
you know. We don't want to
have a seat, buddy.
We don't want to be too offensively dangerous. It's, yeah, it's helping us to, you know, to be the gritty team that
I know you're a point per game guy, but you sit over there.
Yeah, have
don't
a
worry.
Seat.
They're not healthy scratching Philip Forsberg.
Rest up,
promise.
Phil. We'll bring you back for the Cup final.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Rob from Franklin, who wants to weigh in on the Nashville Predators. Rob, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Happy Monday.
You as well.
So, I'm torn about the decisions on who you would trade and who you would hold. But there's one thing for certain, that if you actually dangle Ekholm out there, that he's going to definitely bring in some top first round draft pick. I'm not sure. I haven't heard the numbers, but at least one, maybe two, and a prospect. Something along those lines. But as Crispy says often, why would you trade something that in a year or two you'll be looking for? And he's such a smooth skating defenseman, drills the puck, drills other people. He's just exactly what you need, and he does have a year left. Granlund, on the other hand, Halla, Cousins, I think that they would, you know, it'd be nice to see a package deal come up for one of those people. But Ellis hasn't come up in this conversation, and Ellis he has a lot of good attributes. He's a great leader. He's, he's a very good defenseman, and when he's healthy, can play well. I think it's the leadership portion that might really appeal to other people. But it'd be pretty interesting to think, what if the Preds make a monster deal with some of the people that haven't been performing very well, say Duchesne and maybe another for maybe an Eichel, something along those lines. That would be interesting to look at, because I don't think Buffalo at 8 wins in the season is exactly loving where they're at, and I know that Eichel's very, very unhappy with where he's at. And rather than set yourself for this year, maybe look for years in the future. He is an amazing hockey player.
Right.
And that'd be kind of interesting to look at maybe an underperformer like Duchesne and somebody else like an Ellis, wrap it up with another person for an Ellis, Duchesne for an Eichel. That'd be pretty interesting.
Hey, thanks for the call, Rob. We appreciate it. It certainly would be interesting.
Would you make that deal?
Well, I don't think Buffalo would make that deal. But, yeah, maybe.
Wait, he said Duchesne, Ellis, and something else for Eichel?
Duchesne, Ellis, I don't know if he was necessarily saying you package all that together, but because I certainly wouldn't do that. But, I mean,
yeah,
Jack Eichel's really good. Jack Eichel, also $10 million a year. And he is – now, maybe this is as simple with him as it's Buffalo, and he has been worn down by the Sabres, and he is tired of being there in Buffalo, and I buy all that.
Wouldn't blame
him. Because I would not blame him at all. And maybe he ends up somewhere else and just lights it up. Unfortunately for Jack Eichel, he's always going to be compared to the guy that was drafted right before him, and that was Connor McDavid. And I remember there were teams that were having a literal discussion, like, do you take McDavid or do you take Eichel? And I was like, okay, let's not overthink this here. McDavid's the way to go. So unfortunately for him, that's always going to be part of the discussion here, but maybe it is. Maybe that is something David Poile would consider. We've talked about maybe the smaller deals with expiring contracts. Maybe you do consider a bigger deal like that. To me,
in the off-season.
If I had to guess, that's more of an off-season thing, would be my guess. So,
typically would be.
Could be a very eventful week this week leading up to the deadline, and we'll have you covered all throughout the NHL trade deadline here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the week here leading up to it as well. When we come back, we will switch gears and get into the Tennessee Titans. What do we made of John Robinson's draft record, and how much confidence do we have that he hits in the upcoming draft here coming up in just a few weeks here in April? We'll talk about that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Did you know Joe writes for The Athletic?
So I'd like to promote a couple things on The Athletic.
Oh, good.
Real quick.
Good.
You guys really think I'm a good promoter?
Yeah.
Probably the best in the league.
Yeah, that's what they say. Top three.
Yep.
Right up there.
Yeah.
Here's another edition of Shameless Plugs with Joe Rexroad.
Ah, yes. Another edition of Shameless Plugs with Joe Rexroad, who is indeed top three here on this show, for sure.
Thank you. I wasn't even planning like this. You know, this is just like
this is just this organically is a listicle. What happens.
This is a listicle.
That's a big word.
Yeah,
so I'm apoplectic
I'm
about
like,
it.
Yeah. Well, what was the word you used over the weekend?
That was Vingan. He used incredulous in the press conference with John Hines.
Oh, that's right. You tweeted.
I tweeted it
that he used incredulous.
Yeah,
and then I asked if you were.
That's some American University words right there from Vingan thrown out.
Uh huh. And I asked if you were apoplectic about
yes.
it. A tribute to
Ryan Porth.
Wordsmith Porth.
Thank you.
We spend a lot of time.
Porth Smith.
Tributing Ryan Porth here on the show. Joe, you have come out with a piece at theathletic.com.
A listicle.
Highlighting the best and worst of 5 years of Titans drafts under John Robinson and what they might say about leading into this draft here coming up in less than 4 weeks. Here, it's hard to believe. We're less than 4 weeks away from the NFL draft.
3 weeks from Thursday, right? 3 weeks
yeah,
from Thursday.
Yeah, 3 weeks from Thursday.
Oh, man. Can't get here fast enough.
I know. I'm ready for the draft. That is for sure. We've talked a lot about prospects.
Mock draft fatigue, man.
There's a lot of that going on as well. What was your goal putting this list together? And as you kind of evaluate, generally speaking, what's happened so far with John Robinson and his drafts, what do you think that does tell you about this draft that we've talked about several times, probably the most important draft under John Robinson's tenure with the Titans in terms of your need to really hit on most of these picks that you're going to have, especially four picks coming in the top 100?
Well, one thing about this is, you know, the last draft obviously was his worst. It can get better. The first round pick will not get better.
Nope.
And that's obviously the worst pick of his tenure. And it's obviously the worst draft. Again, you're a year out from that draft. So if the second and third round picks come on and have really great careers, then that changes it a little bit. But I think one good thing is it's not like it's a negative trend, because I think easily his best draft was 2019. His last non-pandemic draft where one, I think this is a big board best available pick in Jeffrey Simmons, not necessarily most pressing need at that very moment.
Agreed.
And then, of course, you pick a receiver who turns out to be terrific, which is very un-Titan-like, and was a good recovery for him from, frankly, Corey Davis and Taywan Taylor 2 years earlier. I mean, neither of them lived up to their pick. But then you go Nate Davis third round, Amani Hooker fourth round, DeAndre Walker fifth, but then David Long Jr. in the sixth. That's a great draft.
It is.
And I think that's the only draft that I would call great, although his first draft, you get a possible Hall of Famer, you get a Pro Bowler, and this is in the second and third round, Derrick Henry, Kevin Byard, and also you did pretty well with that first round pick, Jet Conklin. He's an All-Pro as a rookie, very good. You also balance that out with what was the worst pick of the John Robinson era before Isaiah Wilson, and that would be Kevin Dodd.
Yes.
33rd overall, right at the top of the second round, and obviously a total bust. But so, I mean, there's no negative trend, from then to now, other than the last draft was really bad. But I do think there's when drafting for need, it hasn't gone as well. And so I'd be interested to know what you guys think are – like his best and worst picks and see if we agree on that. Because okay. It's very easy at the top of the worst picks. Again, Wilson and Dodd, everybody would have them 1 and 2.
Correct.
But then it gets, to me, it was difficult. And it's difficult to, how do you judge his best picks too?
Yeah, I think, and this could change. I think this is a big year for this. But if I had to go right now, my number three worst pick would probably be Rashawn Evans, just based on, you moved up to get him in the first round. I think he's played well at times. I thought at the end of 2019 he was turning into a pretty solid player for this group and then took two or three steps backward this past year along with the entire defense. So I think this is a huge year for him. I think I would go – because it's a first-round pick, probably Rashawn Evans at number three.
You would say Rashawn Evans was a worse pick than Adoree Jackson?
I would.
Okay.
It's interesting that you said Adoree Jackson. You'd have him next?
I would have him on the list for sure.
See, he didn't make my list.
Because you drafted Adoree Jackson. Remember when they drafted him and they said, true. Not only is he going to be a corner, but he's going to be an impact return guy.
Yeah.
And that experiment failed miserably.
It was bad.
And you basically got a no-show out of him in 2020. He was fine in 2019. He looked like a corner that was on the rise. And then you cut him, and he doesn't even see his fifth-year option. So I would rank Adoree Jackson over Rashawn Evans.
Okay.
Mostly because Rashawn Evans, there's still an incomplete factor, even though Rashawn Evans took a step back in 2020.
Well, I rank Corey Davis ahead of both of them. And the reason is, one, he went number five.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing you just said. They didn't, they didn't pick up his option. He's gone. And I just, to me, the placement of where he went is a big part of this. I mean, you think about that draft. What if you moved out of there? And you any draft, you can go back and say, hey, you should have picked this guy. I mean, obviously, you can go back and say, why didn't you take Patrick Mahomes? Duh! And, of course, at that point, nobody in the organization, nobody in the fan base, I don't even think you, at that point, after Mariota's 2016 season, were saying he's got to go, were you?
Not after 2016.
Right. So that's when this draft was. But, man, Marshawn Lattimore, Tre'Davious White, T.J. Watt, Derek Barnett. I mean, you move out of five, get, like, another pick, and you could have been so much better off. So I think Adoree's somewhere pretty high because he's still, to your point, first-round pick, didn't live up to where he was picked, did not become any kind of factor as a returner, maybe a negative factor more than a positive factor. But the number five overall pick, I understand that he had a good year last year, and good for him, but that didn't come close to the return on investment you're looking for.
It did not. Now, another guy that would be on my list, and I think I have this right, and Joe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that Taywan Taylor was a third rounder, and that did not work. That was not a pick. I mean, we've talked about this team trying to find receivers for a long time, and Thank God they found A.J. Brown, and he's going to be an absolute stud. But Taywan Taylor in the third round, that was not a very good pick. I think that would probably be on my list.
He made mine.
Did he? Okay.
Absolutely. So I ahead of Adore, yeah. So what about – okay, so I think it's actually harder to rank his best picks. That's a really interesting thing.
Well, we'll
because,
do that.
Because it's just like okay, we got a break. But it's just like when I put Corey Davis as a worst pick because he went so high. So do you value the super sleeper pick in the late rounds that yeah. turns into a player? Or is it like when you hit on a high pick and really hit, what counts more?
That is very interesting. We'll discuss that on the other side of the break. The best picks for John Robinson under his tenure as general manager for the Titans. Taking your thoughts as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. And speaking of the text line, T-Mobile and 1025 The Game are giving you and three friends the chance to win a stay-and-play experience at Hermitage Golf Course. Be listening in today at 4:15 for the keyword to text into the game line at 615-737-1025. You can find more details at the GameNashville.com contest page. We'll be right back. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porther with you on this beautiful Monday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Appreciate you viewing there. Got a lot of viewers so far.
That was weird what
we
just did to the camera.
Just blazing ourselves into the 21st century here on the program. Seeing our beautiful faces every day. Right now, talking the Tennessee Titans and the draft. And Rex Road has come out with a piece at The Athletic, kind of highlighting the draft history for the Titans and John Robinson. The best picks, the worst picks, and looking ahead to how that could impact this draft coming up. We've talked about the worst picks that we feel like John Robinson has made during his tenure. Now transitioning to the best picks. And this is going to be interesting, Joe, from the standpoint you brought up in the last segment. Like we spent so much time talking about first-round bust or picking higher in the draft and then not working out. So when it comes to the best picks, how do we factor in maybe some of the later-round finds that John Robinson has put together as well? So I'm interested to see how we handle this. Now, I do have, when I'm thinking about the best draft picks that John Robinson has made, I mean, there's one to me that stands out that's pretty obvious, I think, but maybe it's a little too obvious and it's not at the top of y'all's list. But, I mean, you do have the face of your franchise and maybe a Hall of Fame player at running back that you got in the second round that I know at the time, I mean, you just had Murray come in, and people said, all right, why are you drafting a running back in the second round? But I think it's worked out okay for the Titans, and he's the best player on the team. So since he's the best player on the team and one of the best players in the league, am I too obvious in saying, hey, Derrick Henry's number one?
Porth, who's your number one?
That was going to be my pick.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty clear, right?
Yeah, I think so. And yet I don't know that everybody would agree.
I don't know either. I mean, there's some options.
You know, because
I did think about Kevin Byard.
Yep. Same draft, right after.
Yeah. A little bit later.
And I do think a year ago.
Yeah.
That Kevin Byard probably is number one for most people. But then he has an off year in the same year. Derrick Henry runs for 2K.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, yeah, come on. So, yeah. No, I mean, I think that's definitely the one, but it gets interesting.
Well, you bring that up. That brings up an interesting question to me because I know he's only been here for 2 years, but, like, what's the better draft pick right now for John Robinson? Is it Kevin Byard or A.J. Brown? Like, I would probably still give the slight edge to Byard. Slight. But it's close, right?
I flip-flopped it.
Did you?
I put A.J. number two. Yeah.
I would put A.J. number two clearly over Kevin Byard.
Okay.
And yeah, Kevin's a great player. But the fact that this franchise has never been able to find a number one receiver, and you found that guy,
in the second round.
All hope, in the second round, I think, to me, even though Kevin Byard's been an all-pro, makes A.J. Brown clearly number two on that list. To me.
That's fair.
I think most people would have Jayon Brown, right? somewhere here. I mean, to me, like
fifth rounder,
the value of what he's done as a fifth round pick is pretty special. But so, I feel like those four are pretty clear in some order.
Does the fourth round pick that you sent to Miami to bring back Ryan Tannehill count? Because that may be number two.
No.
Okay. Just checking.
But good call.
Might be number one.
It could be number one.
Yeah, that's the number one move. Yeah. Like number one personnel move, John Robinson. Yeah.
I was just wondering.
Period. Yeah. But so give me your – okay, we all kind of agree those four players, right? Who would be your next person of best picks without punching your microphone?
Jonnu Smith in the third round?
Yeah, that's an option. I mean, Conklin was still a good pick, but you don't have him now. That's the thing. But Conklin,
you don't have Jonnu either.
You don't have Jonnu either. I'd have to give the edge to Conklin, I think.
I'm going Jonnu, but I think Conklin is close. I think, you know, we'll see with Simmons. You know, yep. I mean, and those are the two first-round picks that I think would be in the discussion. And Nate Davis is someone to watch.
Rapidly approaching, yes.
Yeah, as a third-round pick and what he's turning into. But you know, so for me, going through it, of my best picks for John Robinson, none of them are first-round picks. So does this – is it taking too much of a leap to say maybe he should just trade the heck out of the first round? I mean, but I honestly, apart from this, I think you could make the case to do that, right? You can make the case – That if you could get five picks in the top 100 versus the four you have now, you might be better off and you might be able to get exactly what you want moving down from 22 because of the depth at receiver, because of the depth at edge, and decent depth at corner.
Yeah. And I mean,
he has done really well in the second and third rounds.
He has done very well. And, look, I think Corey Davis is a good player. He wasn't worth – where you selected him. I think Adoree Jackson was a good player. He was not worth, in my opinion, where he was selected in the first round of the draft. So, I mean, Conklin was, but he got hurt, right? So that's part of the story here, too. Like, I think Conklin, had he not gotten hurt, is probably absolutely worth where you picked him in the draft.
Well, and he's a tough one because then he gets healthy and he returns to form and he's really dang. I mean, probably his best football in 2019. You had not picked up his option, which I think was the right call.
Yeah, he's pretty good last year, too.
He was.
With the Browns.
And he'd be pretty good
right now.
Like, he, of all the. And I think Jonnu Smith is going to be. I think that's what's going to happen. By the way, the Giants think Adoree should have gone number one overall.
Yes, apparently so.
But I think that's gonna it's gonna happen with Jonnu Smith. Is Titans fans are gonna watch him have some monster. I mean, New England has some stuff to figure out, but
got the tight end position figured out, man.
I think he's going to be very missed. But yeah, I mean Conklin. So how do you judge the? You have to look at what right now it means. And if he's not on your team, then you dock someone. But it still brought a lot of value while they were there. You know.
By the way. Looking through the history of Titans drafts pre-John Robinson makes me – is another reminder of just how good we've had it as Titans fans since the start of 2016.
Doesn't look half bad, does it?
Compared to what it was in the 5 to 10 years prior.
So what you're saying
holy smokes.
You don't want to see Rustin Webster walking back through that door.
Nor Mike Reinfeldt.
Yeah. Okay.
Taylor Lewan.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
There you go.
Marcus Mariota.
Chance Warmack.
Oh, man.
My boy Justin Hunter.
Who I was shocked to find out last year that apparently Warmack was still in the league.
He's still in the league now. He got signed like 3 weeks ago.
No, he hasn't been. Yeah, he hasn't been. Terrible.
Or maybe he was cut. I don't know.
Boy,
well, let me tell you this. It is was terrible here. My goodness, was he bad.
It is hard to believe that he was on some form of NFL roster in 2020.
Got a Jarrell Casey in there, a Derek Morgan in there, but boy, there is a lot. There's a lot of Myron Roll. There's a lot of like the 2012 draft. Oh my goodness! From Kendall Wright all the way to Scott Solomon and everything in between. A little Cody Sensabaugh, I guess.
When was Locker drafted? 2011.
That was 2011. I mean, again, Casey in the third round there is a nice. I like a little Carl Klug in the fifth, too.
Come on.
But, yeah, there's some slim pickings. There's a pretty marked difference from Robinson and the overall quality of the drafts to what preceded him.
Many names from 2010 to 2015 that I don't even remember.
Yes. Let's go to the text
line. Who is Xavier Gooden? He was a third-round pick. I don't even remember him.
Not one clue.
I totally forgot about Rennie Curran from Georgia. Good college player.
You and everyone else.
But, boy, how long was he in the league?
I don't know. Let's go to the text line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Skyler texts in and says that Simmons would be on the list as well in terms of the best draft picks. He's close.
I think he can get there.
It's a big year for him.
Yeah.
There's no excuse with Autry being there and with Dupree being there. This needs to be a big year for Simmons.
Yes. I mean, I think he had a good second year, and I think he's got the potential to be someone who clearly should be on that list. But I don't think he is right now.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Brian in Portland texts in, I think you have to include the wasted quarterback picks with Luke Falk and Cole McDonald on the bad list because neither of them made the team or the practice squad. But as far as one of the best picks, Jonnu, Nate Davis, and I think David Long Jr. will end up being a really good pick as well.
Yeah, well, that's a real nice pick where they got him. I hear you. I mean, I think like the Luke Falk, I mean, those picks are totally wasted picks, but like that late in the draft, it's usually doesn't go well. I mean, I looked at the Titans, what year was it? They had 3 7th round picks, and they went with little Josh Caraway, Brad Seaton. Anybody remember Brad Seaton, Villanova?
No.
He was like 6'8". Offensive tackle, huge. And then Kalfani Muhammad, you know, was supposed to come in and maybe, you know, compete for the third down back, and it was just, across the board, not good. So I hear you. I think you could make the case. Why would you take a flyer on a QB there? But, I mean, your hit rate is going to be low in any position, right?
For sure.
So they didn't quite make it.
When we come back, we'll continue the discussion on the Tennessee Titans. Corey Curtis from News 2 will join us, as he does each and every week here at 8 o'clock here on the program. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.